£350 million a week extra for the NHS. This, of course, was the controversial claim from Brexiteers leading up to the EU referendum last year. It's back in the news this week because Boris Johnson has repeated it. And the most senior civil servant in the UK for official statistics has said he's talking nonsense. It's not true. This 350 a week figure extra for the health service. It was repeated here, of course, this 350 million claim in Northern Ireland by those who were campaigning to leave the EU. The former DUP Minister Nelson McCausland, the DUP, of course, very much Brexiteers, with us this morning. Good morning to you, Nelson.
Good morning, Stephen. And again, I would just point out I'm not there representing in any way the DUP. I'm just here as a commentator on the show.
And the SDLP MLA, Claire Hannah. Good morning to you, Claire.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Nelson, what do you make of this? What's Boris at? And do you really think people still believe that anywhere close to 350 million is going to be put back into the NHS? Because it's not, is it?
Well, I think it's a fascinating story that has developed since the weekend, and it actually shines a light on a lot of the issues around Brexit at the present time. It also shines, I think, a light on the media that's quite illuminating. The first thing is this. What Boris Johnson said in his article, and he's very clear in that, I think is uncontroversial. What does become controversial is once you start putting a headline on, and he has admitted he wasn't responsible for the headline would be written by someone in the newspaper. He writes the article, they write the headline. But on top of that, then you have the spin put on it by a whole range of media, the New Statesman, the Mirror, and so on. What he actually said was, and yes, once we have settled our accounts, we will take back control of roughly £350 million per week.
Yeah.
It would be a fine thing, as many of us have pointed out, if a lot of that money went on the NHS, provided we use the cash injection to modernise and make the most of new technology.
But during the campaign, the slogan said it would go to the NHS.
Yeah, interesting point is people are now harping back to that. The focus this week...
That was the basis on which people voted in the referendum if they voted for Brexit. It was certainly a factor.
I think the issue of the campaign has been rehearsed at length, and even if you go back to all of the statements that were made both for and against leaving the European Union, there were all sorts of Project Fear claims by George Osborne, who had all the panoply of government and all of the establishment behind him, trotting out all of the scare stories and the Project Fear. So there was a whole lot of stuff at that time. The focus at the moment, I think, has to be on the story this weekend. What Boris Johnson said in his article is clear. The spin that people are putting up now about that is totally wrong. It's not what he said.
Claire, I'll let you come in 1 second. But Nelson, it's a familiar in recent times comment from people like you, and to be fair to you, others, to blame the media. And I don't know if this is coming from how Trump is implementing his campaign in America. But you see, what the media can also do, Nelson, is challenge people like you when you suggest the media is spinning.
Well,
let me just put these points to you, and then, of course, you can respond. You see, the £350 million a week that Boris Johnson, and you're supporting the thrust of his article, when he says that £350 million a week is sent to Brussels, it's not true. Because there's a rebate deducted before any money is sent. So let's just tell the public, break down that 350 million. That figure includes 88 million a week, which is spent in the UK on things like regional aid and support for farmers. There's then another 227 million a week that goes to support things like research projects in the UK universities and companies. So if you deduct all that, you come to 161 million a week. So you might criticise the media, but those are the facts.
And the fact is, Stephen, whether BBC likes it or not, whether The Guardian likes it or not, whether The Independent likes it or not, that what Boris Johnson said, it was, we will take back control of that amount. In other words, there was money that was put into the EU, which doesn't come back.
Come on, Nelson.
Sorry.
Take back control of 350 million a week, but we're not sending 350 million a week. That's the point. I've just broken it down.
And actually, if you would let me finish making my point, we might actually get somewhere. What Boris Johnson actually said was that, yes, we put a lot of money in, we get some of it back, but quite often what we get back is directed towards what the Brussels bureaucrats tell us we can spend it on.
What he actually said was, once we've settled our accounts, we will take back control of roughly $350 million per week.
So whether it is money that you put in that you never get back, or whether it's money that you put in but you get some of it, you get it back under the direction, under the dictatorship of the Brussels bureaucrats, the fact is that at the end of the day, you do not have absolute control over your money.
Why are you defending this? Why are you defending Boris Johnson saying, we will take back control of roughly $350 million a week when we're actually only sending after, as I've explained, the regional aid and the support for farmers and the $27 million on top of that for research projects in the UK, it's $161 million.
Stephen, I find this troublesome because it's quite clear that what he said was one thing. The media spin on it wasn't something that they could really get their teeth into because he'd worded the article very carefully and accurately. Couldn't get their teeth into it. So you then get the spin on it. And then it just turned into a whole story because what has happened the weekend was that I think many people will welcome the fact that Boris Johnson was actually setting out a vision for Brexit, a positive vision. After months and months and months of a daily diet of negativity, media spin, misery about all the world is going to collapse, all the disasters that are going to happen, all of that misery, something positive, a vision for it. And that's a good thing.
Of course, so, what do you leave out? Because again, it's this... It's,
I don't leave anything out. I'm quite happy to talk about all of it.
Well, let me talk to you about all of it then. Because you see, this campaign that there seems to be at the moment, and it's not just in Northern Ireland, is it? And indeed, I referred to America earlier and how Trump approaches things too. The media spin. Of course, what you, as you know, a very seasoned former politician, have left out is that the head of UK statistics has said that these figures are not true, Sir David Norgrove. So what you describe as media spin and you position as it's the media spinning this, the most senior person in UK statistics says these figures are not true. That's not media spin, Nelson.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting to read exactly what David Norgrove said, and actually when you look at the short note that he sent to dear Foreign Secretary, it's actually quite unclear. I'm not sure if he had actually read the article or if he was relying on the headlines. Certainly he responded very quickly. But in actual fact, he says that it confuses gross and net contributions. The point is, as I've tried to make there, and as Boris Johnson made in that article, it's about getting control of our money and ending the situation where Brussels dictates how and what you spend.
Do you want to read out the last sentence, Sir David said?
Oh, yeah, it's a very short sentence. It's a clear misuse of official statistics.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what's media spin about that?
David Norgrove is not infallible. Neither you, neither am I.
He's the chair of UK statistics.
Yeah. And since when is it the case that it's just because you're a position in public life that makes you infallible?
I guess I'm trying to use this story to also address a wider point, Nelson.
Yeah, okay.
Which is these accusations of media spin and journalists are out with an agenda. We're taking a story here where the head of UK statistics says to the Foreign Secretary, which is pretty unprecedented, that he is misusing official statistics.
Yeah.
That's not media spin.
No,
supporting
that's
a story.
A separate issue, but that
doesn't supporting a story.
Yeah, it doesn't in any way alter the fact that I think the intervention of David Norgrove added to the story. But already, some of the headlines were utterly ridiculous. And what has happened is that it has enabled people to divert attention away from having a positive vision on a future for the United Kingdom outside of the EU. And the focus is put on to a particular point in a 4,000-word article The focus is diverted away onto that, and it gets into a whole dispute. And the big point there about the need for a positive vision for the future is simply set aside, because those who are the Remainers, those who cannot accept the fact that we're leaving the EU, who are trying to undo, thwart the will of the people of the United Kingdom, those folk are, I suppose, concerned okay. that if one sets out a positive vision for it, actually it will damage their case.
Claire Hannah?
I think this is mad, but it adds up. Nelson there before the election said on your programme, he told me he didn't care what the impact of Brexit was so long as we were leaving the European Union. And this is indeed Trump stuff. I mean, it's black and white. He's been... it's been highlighted by, as you say, the most senior civil servant on statistics that it is completely incorrect. And yes, Boris is trying to put
something that Boris Johnson has hit back on, by the way, and come back to Norgrove and taken him on, and he's standing by his figure. This is the foreign secretary standing by the 350 million figure.
Well, the fact is, he's trying to put positive spin on it, and there's so little positive you can say about Brexit because of the lack of a plan, the complete chaos in the cabinet, the dire financial projections. The only way he can inject positivity is to lie.
The type of lies
that the campaign was built
on. Your problem, Claire, is these dire financial projections haven't actually come to pass. Now, I know we're not out of Europe yet, but many people who were against Brexit predicted that the world would cave in straight after the referendum. Actually, it hasn't.
But, Stephen, nobody actually said that. People like Nelson said, oh, you predicted World War III. We never actually did that. And if you look today, the Institute for Fiscal Studies has said that there will be a net fiscal loss. So we've always said that even if the 350 million statistic was correct, which it never was, the economy will shrink to that respect, so we wouldn't be getting that money. The fact is, and the really sad thing about it, is that the would-be leader of the Conservative Party, and this is what this was, the start of a leadership bid from Boris, has so little regard for the truth that he doesn't mind repeating these things, because he is like Trump and he thinks he can spin it. And the really sad thing is that the DUP has pledged a blank cheque to these people on whatever Brexit they finally come up with. The DUP have said they'll back them. And sadder still, the DUP and Sinn Féin together seem quite content to hand us over to direct rule at the hands of exactly these same people. It's sad in every respect.
Nelson?
But nobody, we haven't Brexited, and come back to me and we'll see if this goes as these people are suggesting it does in London. If Brexit plays out in the way that the plan, such as they have one, come back to me and we'll see which of the dire financial projections were wrong.
Nelson?
And once again, someone who cannot reconcile themselves, really, I suppose, to the fact that the United Kingdom is about to leave the EU, gets onto this whole track around predictions
of
how bad it's going to be. Now, the fact is, just to go back to your point there, there was a very short letter sent by David Norgrove to the Foreign Secretary, and as you rightly pointed out, there was subsequently a conversation between Boris Johnson and Norgrove, and then an official reply which was sent, which is, if you can't get access to it any other way, apparently you can get it, and I've just brought it up there, on Boris Johnson's Facebook page. I must admit, I'm not actually a Facebook friend of his, but it is freely available to anybody on Facebook, and you can actually go down there and read his full, at-length explanation of exactly what he said.
Are you a Facebook friend of mine?
I don't know whether it's actually you, Stephen, or somebody pretending to be you, but there was someone who did come on and sign up as a friend on Facebook, I have to say, who claimed to be Stephen Nolan, so I don't know whether it is or not.
We'll have to check that. Let me bring in a few calls here, Claire. Michael in Newton Abbey. Morning, Michael.
Good morning, Stephen. If something could be cleared up, when Boris Johnson talks about the 350 million, and you have spoken about the money that actually is sent as 168 million, I think it was, you said.
According to BBC Fact Check, Fact Check, 161 million.
Right. My question is this. Does the UK government have to send 350 million in order to get the refund, which means that they only get 161 million?
No. So what happens is the UK does not send 350 million a week to Brussels. Fact. The rebate is deducted before the money is sent. But and that takes the contribution down to 276 million a week. That figure, right? So it's 276 million, right? And then that figure includes 88 million a week spent in the UK on things like regional aid and support for farmers. And then there's another 27 million a week that goes to support things like research projects in UK universities and companies. If you deduct all of that, that's how you come up with 161 million.
Right, but again, I'm saying, so where did the 350 million actually come? Is this a figment of Boris's imagination, or is there something in the European funding that states that the UK must pay, irrespective of how much they're going to get back, they must pay 350 million? Because we want to know where the 350 million actually came from.
Well, as I've said to you, we don't, you know, it's not about getting 350 million back because we don't send 350 million.
Is it the European government that is stipulating this figure? Do they stipulate, or do they say, look, if you just send us 161 million, we will then give you 88 or 267 million, you know, in rebates? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because so that's my point. My point is, is the European government actually just saying, look, you just send us 161 million and we will take care of paying 88 million
Nelson, do you want to respond to this?
I think it's very clear that the 350 million is, in a sense, it would be understood by most people as the starting point. Then, on top of that...
By whom, Nelson? Determined by whom? Europe?
Well, it will be Brussels bureaucrats that will work that one out.
Right. So if that is not the issue sent, then does it mean that they would not honour their 88 million or their 267 million rebate?
Yeah. I think what has happened was that there was negotiation by the UK government at a certain point of a rebate for the UK, which brought the figure down from 350 million, and then there's a certain amount of money that comes back to the UK from Europe to be spent on various things. What Boris Johnson was saying was, instead of all this faffing about with Brussels, what we would actually do is have the starting point, £350 million is the starting point, and we will have absolute control in the United Kingdom.
Well, I think
you. If you don't mind, because there are lots of calls on this, but there's also another story I want to talk to Nelson and Claire about. And it's on the front page of the newsletter today, where the newsletter is reporting, Nelson, that Geoffrey Donaldson, the man in charge of party discipline at Westminster, has reacted, I'm reading from the newsletter here, was reacting to the proposal from the SDLP that if the Irish government attempts to propose any plan for resolving the impasse at Stormont, the DUP will completely walk out of the talks. Why would they do that, Nelson?
I haven't seen the article. And I wouldn't want to comment on something that I haven't seen in its entirety and in its context. And that would be unreasonable, I think, for you. You'd probably expect that.
Of the Irish government at least trying to break the impasse, what would be wrong with that?
Well, I think it's very impertinent of a government in Dublin interfering in the internal affairs of North Ireland. That would be the general view of unionists right across the board. Whatever unionist party they might support, that would be the unionist view. It is impertinent for a Dublin government to interfere in our internal affairs. Now, the focus should be where it rightly belongs. The spotlight should be where it rightly belongs. I noticed earlier on, Claire Hannah made the point around the DUP and Sinn Féin. The truth of the matter is, there is only one political party. That is the blockage. There is only one political party drawing red lines. There is only one political party trying to bully its way and holding the people of Northern Ireland to ransom, and that is Sinn Féin.
Well, that's not true. Again, that's not factually true.
Sorry, is
because
it?
Because the DUP have red lines, don't they?
Sorry, the DUP, I think, said very clearly they would go back into the Assembly tomorrow.
Yeah, the DUP are very publicly saying they have no red lines.
They were saying they would go back in tomorrow. Sinn Féin will say,
yes,
we will only go in when we get all of our conditions.
No,
met.
The DUP are saying that the only party with red lines is Sinn Féin.
Correct.
While, well, you say correct, but it's factually incorrect what they're saying because, for example, the DUP are saying that they will not have a standalone Irish Language Act.
That is not.
So that is a red line.
Actually,
isn't it?
I don't know whether you've swallowed some of this spin from Sinn Féin or not.
According to you, the media swallow lots of spin,
well,
but it's a fact.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a factual statement. The DUP has that red line. They will not accept the standalone Irish Language Act.
Stephen, that is not a precondition or a condition or whatever.
If they're saying they won't accept it, how is that not
Stephen,
a red line?
Sinn Féin collapsed the executive. Sinn Féin are preventing the executive being established, and the fact is that people, if they're, I think anybody I meet who has any knowledge of political matters, even the most casual interest in it, everybody I meet is quite clear that the party that is once again trying to intimidate the people of Northern Ireland is Sinn Féin. Other parties are happy to go, I assume that's true of other parties. Yeah. We saw their comments recently from Alliance, the Green Party and so on. People actually, I think, generally across the board want to get the Assembly up and running. Yeah.
And
Sinn Féin are the problem. But the
and that's up for,
that
that's up for debate and not for me to comment
that.
On. It's not for me to comment on, is it? But it, and Claire, then, of course, you can come in. But it is factually untrue for the DUP to say they do not have any red lines when clearly they do.
Stephen, DUP, I think, and other unionist parties, and indeed other parties beyond unionists, generally are saying we would go back into an executive and work in an executive now.
Okay.
The party that is the obstacle and is setting the preconditions is Sinn Féin. And if you can't see that, Stephen, I don't know. I think you've had a bad start to the day.
Claire Hannah?
It's very clear where Sinn Féin's problem is.
I haven't seen the article. I've just looked up while you were talking there, and you're right, Stephen, to point out that the DUP have red lines just as much as Sinn Féin do, in that they insist on not forming government in the same way as Sinn Féin do. The fact is, I am never going to be a defender for Sinn Féin, and yes, I agree. I don't think they have any interest in returning to government, but it is absolute and utter unreasonableness and intransigence, like Nelson has just come out with now, and like I've just read in the newsletter from Geoffrey Donaldson, makes that so easy for them and gives them so much cover, because it's very difficult to do business whenever you're so unreasonable about that. And people,
well, why
like
should
us are
the Dublin
to,
government be interfering, the DUP would say, in Northern Ireland's affairs?
Well, for a number of reasons. One, they have said, we have suggested that they publish plans, compromise positions, since the DUP don't seem to find any ability within themselves to compromise. Two, they're basically suggesting, well, shoot the messenger. If they're playing, we're not playing. You know, they haven't even heard what proposals would be coming out. They might be to their tastes and they might not, but they're basically saying, if you even breathe a word into this process, we will take our ball and run away. They fail to get that Dublin, like London, is a co-guarantor of the process here, and they fail to grasp once again, and this is the root of a lot of the problems, and this does make it very, very easy for Sinn Féin to stay out of government for as long as they want, because the DUP refuse to accept that a very sizable minority of people here identify as Irish and are entitled to, and successive decades of agreements entitled
Geoffrey
Irish
Donson,
people to have...
Geoffrey Donson has told the newsletter, given that most of the issues we're dealing with relate entirely to the internal affairs of Northern Ireland, there is no way that we would countenance proposals coming from the Irish government. Such a proposition would be a fundamental breach of the Good Friday Agreement and would bring the talks to an end. That crosses that line. They cross that line, the talks are over, he says.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Without even hearing the proposals, to say, if they say it, we won't agree with it, is exactly why and you must know, this drives people into the arms of non-voting and into the arms of Sinn Féin, because it does prove their point that the DUP are so very difficult to work with.
And a DUP spokesperson has told the Nolan Show the DUP is committed to the talks and wants to see devolution restored immediately. Nelson.
The truth is, I think, that we're facing, in the not that distant future, an election in the Irish Republic. There will be an election down there. Sinn Féin their policies at the moment, their tactics are determined by that. The same is also true of Fine Gael. And that's why Fine Gael are trying to be so bullish at the moment, to show that they're a firm party, a party that's resolute, a party that can be trusted. I welcome the fact, actually, that the leader of Fianna Fáil has said there'll be no coalition with Sinn Féin, because that's the thing that Fine Gael needs to be doing at the moment. Coming out quite clear, knocking down Gerry Adams' dream of getting into a coalition in Dublin, because that might put some reality into his head.
Thank you very much indeed, Nelson and Claire. Thank you.